around the United States are slated to be shut down in the coming years, and the high-level radioactive waste they created taken away. But the bad news is trying to figure out where exactly away is. What if someone else's away happens to be your own backyard? And when you check into the presumed safety of the storage system being proposed for materials that will be dangerously radioactive for literally hundreds of thousands of years, you hear someone who truly knows about it say,
"We understand this design has never been done before, where they're stacking two canisters on top of one another. And there is also a lack of a monitoring system. So if there's a leak or some other problem inside the canisters, there's really no way to tell, and then also no way to repair it."
Well, when you hear something like that, no matter where you live, it starts to dawn on you that you are in that seat we all share.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are leaking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we talk with Leona Morgan and Eileen Shaughnessy of the Nuclear Issues Study Group in southwest New Mexico. They are fighting the push by government and the nuclear industry to turn that area into a nuclear sacrifice zone for radioactive waste, of course, without the consent of the tribal people and the local population. We'll also have Numbnuts of the Week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness, activist shoutouts, and more honest nuclear information than Sean Hannity has ever broadcast on Fox. All of this coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, April 17, 2018, and here is the week's nuclear news from a different perspective. Starting out this week in the U.S., where the Department of Energy has announced that a 55-gallon barrel containing radioactive sludge ruptured late on Wednesday, April 11, at the Idaho National Laboratories, the nation's top federal nuclear research lab. The barrel contains a mixture of fluids and solvents that came from nuclear weapons production at the Rocky Flats plant near Denver, Colorado. In a very slyly worded statement, federal officials said this is, quote, "the first known rupture of a barrel containing radioactive sludge at an eastern Idaho nuclear site." This glosses over the 2014 explosion of a 55-gallon drum of nuclear waste in the underground waste isolation pilot plant in Carlsbad, New Mexico. One that contaminated the underground storage site, had it closed down for over 2 years, and now is only in partial operation. Ironically, the barrel that ruptured had been moved to the containment structure in Idaho National Labs in preparation for shipment to the waste isolation pilot plant. Experts say more barrels might contain a rupture-inducing mix of radioactive and other materials. No word yet if anybody is checking for kitty litter. Here's a story out of Canada with direct implications for the United States. Radioactive metal from the Fukushima nuclear plant disaster in Japan has been discovered in the Fraser Valley in British Columbia, causing researchers to raise the alarm about the long-term impact of radiation on British Columbia's west coast. Fraser Valley is about 120 miles inland from Vancouver on the Pacific coast, and examination of a soil sample from Kilby Provincial Park has, for the first time in this province, found cesium-134, Further evidence of Fukushima's radioactivity being transported to Canada by air and water. What makes this important to the U.S. is that Vancouver is 12 degrees latitude further north than Fukushima, which lines up almost exactly with San Francisco. 120 miles inland, which is the equivalent of what happened in British Columbia, would be two-thirds of the way to Yosemite. There is no word of comparable soil sampling taking place in the United States to test for trans-Pacific radioactive air pollution. It suggests that there are still emissions and an indication of continuing contamination from Fukushima hitting the west coast of North America. A 2017 article about Three Mile Island's nuclear accident being linked to thyroid cancer is again making the grounds and is still relevant. The Penn State Medical Center study found a link between the 1979 nuclear meltdown and thyroid cancers in south central Pennsylvania. The study marks the first time the partial meltdown, I put partial in quotes because a meltdown is a meltdown, of Unit 2's reactor can be connected to specific cancer cases, according to the researchers. The findings may pose a dramatic challenge to the nuclear industry's position that the radiation released had no effect on human health. And as someone who has just returned from Three Mile Island and been in touch with the Facebook page Three Mile Island Survivors, I can assure you that there were dramatic changes to human health because of the radiation releases from that nuclear accident. And I will be linking to this article on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 356. In Arizona, the Palo Verde nuclear generating station could be forced to close in the next decade if voters approve a renewable energy ballot measure. This according to the plant's owners, Arizona Public Service Company. They are fighting this clean energy ballot measure on several fronts. Six reactors have closed since 2013, and eight more reactors are planned for shutdown before 2025, mostly because of increased competition from cheap natural gas. The Clean Energy for a Healthy Arizona measure would amend the state's constitution to require utilities to get half their electricity from renewable sources such as solar and wind by 2030. Meanwhile, an Exelon official has announced that there will be no new nuclear units built in the United States because of high cost. William Von Hohn, Senior Vice President and Chief Strategist Officer at Exelon, told the U.S. Energy Association's annual meeting in Washington, D.C. on April 12th that due to their high cost relative to other generating options, no new nuclear power units will be built in the U.S. Oh, please make it so, make it so. He said, "The fact is, and I don't want my message to be misconstrued in this part, I don't think we're building any more nuclear plants in the United States. I don't think it's ever going to happen." Ah, William, from your mouth to somebody's ears. Over to Japan, where that country is set to start decommissioning its troubled Manju fast breeder reactor after decades of accidents, cost overruns, and scandals. It is the beginning of the end of a controversial project that exposed the shortcomings of the country's nuclear policy and the government's failure to fully explain the risks and costs. In July, the Japan Atomic Energy Agency will begin decommissioning what was originally hailed as a dream reactor that was expected to produce more nuclear fuel than it consumed in a nuclear Ponzi scheme of sorts. The government has so far spent more than 1 trillion yen, or $9.44 billion U.S. dollars, on the facility. Full decommissioning of what is now a nightmare project is expected to take about 30 years and cost 375 billion yen, or $3.5 billion U.S. dollars. But that figure could climb, as the full technical requirements and the selection of nuclear waste sites are not well understood. The eternal nuclear story of where do we put the waste? Another Japanese nuclear reactor resumed commercial operations on April 10. Unit 3 of the Oe nuclear power plant in Japan's Fukui Prefecture. Despite objections by the local population and the local government, restarted the reactor on March 14, and it attained criticality, a sustained chain reaction, the following day. The reactor is the sixth to be restarted after clearing the country's revised safety regulations in the wake of the ongoing Fukushima nuclear disaster. Announcement has just been made of a demonstration test of a process to decontaminate radioactive soil that was successfully carried out, according to this report, last November in Japan's Fukushima Prefecture. The test of the French-designed process is a froth flotation technology and was proposed within the framework of a call for projects for the demonstration of decontamination techniques launched by Japan's Ministry of the Environment. Last July, this process was one of 10 technologies selected for on-site demonstration out of a total of 19 put forward. The question is, why not try it here in the United States too? Give them multiple tests. We certainly have enough sites with which to do it. In fact, let's invite all 10 of the technologies passed by Japan, all 19 that applied. Let's try them all. What have we got to lose except the radioactive contamination? And now, taking an international perspective.
Nuclear hot seat, nuclear hot seat, nuclear hot seat, none that's out of week.
WTO. WTF! The World Trade Organization has issued a ruling accusing South Korea of violating trade regulations by banning imports of seafood from Japan's Fukushima Prefecture ever since the triple meltdown in 2011. Japan filed a complaint with the World Trade Organization against South Korea in 2015, claiming the ban was not based on scientific grounds. But when faced with South Korea's desire for scientific grounds, meaning they wanted to require all Japanese exporters of marine products to submit certificates of inspection if small amounts of radioactive cesium or iodine are detected. When South Korea did that, Japan balked at the testing, calling this demand an effective barrier to fair trade. How about reframing it as an effective barrier to possibly importing radiologically contaminated seafood into a country that does not want it? On February 22nd of this year, the WTO's Kangaroo Court dispute settlement panel said South Korea's ban was, quote, inconsistent with the global trade body's rules against arbitrarily or unjustifiably discriminating against another country, and recommended that South Korea take corrective action, meaning do it their way, and remove the ban. Now, South Korea's government has appealed that ruling. A government spokesperson said on Monday, April 16, the nuclear fallout persists in Japan, and it's our job to make sure the food Koreans eat is safe. The nerve! South Koreans are not pretending. They actually want to make certain the food is really, genuinely safe. That's what Japan is pushing back against. Anything that impugns their smoke and mirrors of safety leading up to the 2020 radioactive Tokyo Olympics. So the ongoing Fukushima food fight continues. And that's why, World Trade Organization, and your attempt to impose Japan's radioactive will upon the right-minded food protective actions of South Korea, you are this week's
nuclear hot seat, none that's out of week.
More on the Fukushima food fight comes from Hong Kong, as Japan struggles to get crucial overseas markets to accept its produce. A charm offensive, as it was labeled, was staged by Japanese Foreign Minister Taro Kono by visiting Hong Kong last weekend for the first time in 21 years to lobby Chief Executive Carrie Lam to lift a ban on imports from Fukushima and the surrounding region. Hong Kong accounts for a quarter of Japan's food export trade and is among the 55 countries that have blocked imports of shipments from Fukushima since the 2011 nuclear disaster. Hong Kong's Lam expressed her reluctance to reopen trade, emphasizing that it is incumbent upon the government to safeguard public health, and hence effective measures must be in place to ensure food safety and to maintain public confidence. Sounds a lot like what they were saying in South Korea. Lam said that despite the ruling against South Korea, the current import ban will remain in force, and the government will make its utmost efforts to ensure radiation-contaminated food does not reach the dinner table. In Italy, a nuclear plant in the process of being decommissioned was impounded on Friday, April 13, bad luck for them, after the nearby sea was found to be contaminated. The ITREC plant in Rotondella, near Matera in Basilicata, was found to be pouring radioactively contaminated runoff water into the Ionian Sea. Three water collection tanks and the runoff pipe were seized in a probe by Potenza prosecutors. Possible charges in the case are environmental pollution, misrepresentation, illegal waste disposal, and illegal waste trafficking. Go get them. We'll have this week's featured interview in just a moment, but first, 7 years after the start of the nuclear triple meltdown in Japan, the people of Fukushima don't have a lot of outlets to share the truth of what's happening to them. Nuclear Hot Seat provides it. 39 years after Three Mile Island, Nuclear Hot Seat is one of the few places available where people can learn the long-covered-up truth about the impact on their health and lives. Every week, 52 weeks a year, we present programs filled with verifiable news and unique interviews on Fukushima, Three Mile Island, and every other aspect of the nuclear issue, be it coming from Japan, the U.S., India, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the EU, UK, or anywhere else. Because nuclear problems encircle our precious globe, and no one is immune to its consequences. That's why you need to know the nuclear news. And that's why Nuclear Hot Seat comes your way every week. We are supported exclusively by the generosity of listeners like you. So please, take a moment to help us out. You can make a donation of any size by going to nuclearhotseat.com and clicking on the big red donate button. You can use that same button to set up a recurring donation that will support us on a monthly basis. And for an easy, inexpensive way to help us meet our expenses, consider what we will no longer call the Starbucks donation because of their recent blatant racist actions. But you can still buy the show the equivalent of a cup of coffee every month. We have everything set up for you to easily send us a $5 monthly donation. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the big green donate button. And if you prefer to do it the old-fashioned way, through snail mail, just send an email to nuclearhotseat.com and we'll give you that information. Your support now and throughout the year will help us keep bringing you the best, most up-to-date information on what's going on with nuclear issues around the world. So thank you for listening, thank you for caring, and know that whatever you can do to help us grow our reach into the world, you have my gratitude. Here's this week's featured interview. The ongoing problem of what to do with high-level radioactive waste from nuclear reactors remains unsolved, though the nuclear industry likes to pretend that they're working on it. What they're actually doing is trying to sweep it under the rug, impose it on powerless people, the poor, indigenous nations, the ignorant, and then walk away, in essence kicking the problem down the road, with dubious safety measures, which are unlikely to protect people or the environment. This week, we talk with two activists who are directly involved in fighting attempts by the government and the nuclear industry to dump radioactive waste in what some are calling a nuclear sacrifice zone in New Mexico and just across the border in West Texas. It's a sacrifice being forced upon people who are now fighting back against it, including today's guests. Leona Morgan of the Diné, or Navajo people, works as a community organizer and activist challenging nuclear colonialism and currently focusing on environmental issues impacting indigenous people in the Southwest, from uranium mining to nuclear waste proposals and transport. She co-founded Dene No Nukes, works with Hall No and Radiation Monitoring Project, and is a co-founder of the Nuclear Issues Study Group. Eileen Shaughnessy is an educator, activist, and musician living on stolen Pueblo land. Eileen teaches courses in the Sustainability Studies program at the University of New Mexico, including Nuclear New Mexico, a course she designed to address the legacy of environmental racism and colonialism in New Mexico created by the nuclear weapons industry. She also fronts the social justice indie folk band Eileen and the In-Betweens and is a co-founder of the Nuclear Issues Study Group.
Leona Morgan and Eileen Shaughnessy, welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you.
Thanks, Libby. Thanks for having us on the show.
Leona, you've been active in nuclear issues for many years now. Give us a brief rundown of our background so we can appreciate the woman we're speaking with.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I've been doing work primarily on uranium mining for the better part of 11 years to stop and prevent new mining and education about all of the abandoned uranium mines across the United States. But my focus is always going to be on my people's homeland, which we call Dene Bekea, also known as the Navajo Nation, but that's actually technically a smaller region that I'm concerned about. It's a political thing. For the last 6 years, I've been more focused on the nuclear fuel chain in general. So from uranium mining to basically every other step, because we have all of it in New Mexico. And so Eileen Shaughnessy and I helped to co-found a group called the Nuclear Issues Study Group. So that's what I'm working on today. And we did a show previously on Hall No and the Grand Canyon uranium mining. I'm still working on that, as well as the Radiation Monitoring Project.
Eileen, tell us a little bit about your background so we can start getting to know you as well.
My name is Eileen Shaughnessy. I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I'm originally from the Midwest. I moved here to Albuquerque 8 years ago to go to graduate school and to study the nuclear weapons industry. And after I graduated with my degree, I started teaching at the University of New Mexico, and I developed a class called Nuclear New Mexico, which is really focused on unraveling and highlighting the long history of nuclear colonialism and environmental racism that's connected with this industry, as we all know. And I'm also a queer musician and songwriter, and I write anti-nuclear songs, and I bring art into everything that I do.
Tell us about the Nuclear Issues Study Group. What is it, and what is it studying? What does it focus on?
We started this group to bring in new activists and organizers into this movement. In Albuquerque, we are in the heart of what we call our Nuclear New Mexico. And so this organization is to not just study the issues, but to do organizing around it. And so in order to address and to fight these issues, we need to know about them. So we call it the Nuclear Issues Study Group, but we also engage with the community. We did an action today. We did a demonstration at the Santa Fe Rail Yard, and so we just started this CASC tour, which is to bring awareness statewide about a nuclear issue we wanted to talk to you about today. And so we look at various issues from uranium mining to nuclear waste dumping, as well as weapons production. And so in New Mexico, like I said, we have pretty much almost every step of the fuel chain except for a commercial nuclear reactor. And so our group, we're focused on providing a space for a younger generation, as well as being more inclusive of people of color, indigenous folks. And we really do want to, like Eileen said, bring art into the movement and, you know, have some fun and make it interesting. Because right now, there's a lot of issues that we're really concerned about. And the biggest concern that I've had for the last 10 or so years is the lack of young people in the movement. Just from my involvement, it seems like we could use some more people getting involved these days.
I have to say that many of the time I've been at an event and the younger generation was represented by you. So I agree that we do. I agree we do need a lot more younger members. Let's switch this over into getting specific. What are the major areas of concern that are up? If you're talking about nuclear New Mexico and having so many steps in the fuel chain, what is it that you are currently studying and that raises the greatest alarm bells for you?
Well, the biggest issue today is the Holtec International proposal to build a consolidated interim waste storage site in southeast New Mexico. So this would be what is supposedly interim storage. So they're calling it a temporary waste storage site, which would be about 16 miles north of WIPP. I'm sure a lot of your listeners know about WIPP for transuranic waste.
That's the waste isolation pilot plant in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that had so many problems and had the exploding canister and the underground contamination several years ago. And the problem still isn't cleared up, but they're pretending it is.
Right. And it's costing a few billion dollars to deal with. So this site is actually close to Carlsbad, New Mexico, in southeast New Mexico. And very nearby is a low-level waste site, so it's just over the Texas state line, which is waste control specialists. So waste control specialists, we call WCS, is also applying to NRC for this CIS license, the consolidated interim storage. There's three issues. When we talk about consolidated interim storage, we're talking about not just Holtec and not just waste control specialists, but there's also a bill in Congress, which is to change the National Nuclear Waste Policy Act to allow these two things to move forward. Because under current law, they actually are not legal. The National Nuclear Waste Policy Act says that there cannot be an interim site built or constructed or operating until a permanent site is open. There is no permanent site. We all know Yucca failed and is not going to move forward, thanks to a lot of your listeners and to all the work people have done to prevent Yucca from opening. But because they haven't opened Yucca and there's no way to legally do this, they're trying to change the law in Congress. So this is H.R. 3053. So that's one aspect of this CIS issue. But what we're really focusing on now is Holtec, because they're in the middle of a scoping period right now, and the NRC has accepted the license. They announced this on February 28th this year, which means they are moving forward in processing this license. And in early March, they also initiated this open comment period for scoping comments.
You have mentioned scoping a number of times. What does that mean? What does it refer to? And what are the implications of this process?
Right now, the NRC has filed in the National Registrar that they're intending to do an environmental impact statement, an EIS, on this application. And the scoping period is the time for the public to submit to the NRC what we would like them to include in this EIS. The scoping period is the very beginning process now that Holtec has submitted their application and it's been formally accepted. And after the scoping period, there will be later a draft EIS, which is a draft environmental impact statement, which the public can also then comment on, and then the final EIS. So we're at the very beginning process of this application licensing procedure. And what we're trying to do right now is to just put awareness out there that this is happening and to generate comments.
Just to be clear about what this issue is, Holtec is proposing to take all of the nation's high-level spent nuclear fuel and transport it mostly on rails and barges and dump it in southeastern New Mexico. The proposal includes 100,000 metric tons of this waste, which is actually 20,000 metric tons above what is created now. So what that means is that they're allowing for future waste to be dumped here. And the proposal is that this waste would be there for 120 years. So even though it's being sold as a temporary dump site, we are really concerned here in New Mexico that this waste will be here forever. And as Leona said, New Mexico has been dumped on and has been really negatively impacted by the entire nuclear fuel chain for far too long. So we really view this as a really egregious form of environmental racism. And currently, what our group is doing, we are collaborating with some local groups, also some national groups, to go on a cask tour. So we have this inflatable cask, which is a representation of what one of these transport casks would look like. It's 16 feet long and 8 feet tall. And we're staging press conferences around the state right now to raise awareness and to try to get folks to come out to these scoping hearings.
We could really use something like that here in Southern California, because Holtec is a big name that has popped up, but not in a good way, around San Onofre's decommissioning. Because we know of Holtec as the manufacturers of poorly designed storage canisters with limited usable lifespan, about 20 years of usable lifespan before they have to be replaced. They're only 5/8 of an inch thick stainless steel. It is known to degrade in seawater environments, and San Onofre is right there on the ocean. And now valve problems have been discovered in 4 of the already sealed containers that cannot be opened and corrected. This is not a great track record for Holtec. What are they proposing in your area?
They are proposing to bring the waste in these transport casks and then transfer them into what they're calling the high storm UMAX vertical ventilated system. And this is unique because what they're doing is they're stacking 2 canisters on top of one another, and they will be somewhat underground. The canisters will be underground in a concrete pad, and the way it's designed is to have 2 canisters on top of each other underground, but at the top of the storage system will be open to the atmosphere, where they're supposed to have some type of ventilation, which is also an issue that we need to study more. That's why it's really important during the scoping period to get in all of this information to NRC to tell them, we want to know more about the ventilation system. We want to know more about the issues with the valves that you're mentioning and their shims and those defects that occurred, because we understand this design has never been done before, where they're stacking 2 canisters on top of one another. And there is also a lack of a monitoring system. So if there's a leak or some other problem inside the canisters, there's really no way to tell, and then also no way to repair it. So some of the issues you're talking about, the salt water out here in the desert, some of the things we're concerned about is being under the hot sun. We're concerned about any type of problems that may happen if little critters get in there, or if there is a heavy rain or wind, what this would mean for the local communities, and also if there is any other issues with water getting in the canisters, as well as the canisters leaking and exploding. And so this design, like I said, this is the first time Holtec, or any place really, that stores nuclear waste. They normally don't stack 2 canisters on top of one another. So this is what they're proposing, and there's a lot of issues in this region. There's also some seismic activity. In their application, they downplay it, but there's also a sinkhole nearby because there's a lot of oil and gas drilling in the area. So we're very concerned about all of these things that have not been thoroughly studied. So the local folks in the community, I mean, they're opposed to it, but there's a lot of questions still regarding the impact to our environment, and then also all of the unstudied and unknown things about the transport, because the transport routes are not known.
There are so many things wrong with what you are reporting they are planning to do. It seems very cavalier, very short-sighted, very incomplete, very sloppy. And this is dealing with nuclear waste where they might call it interim storage for 120 years, but that sounds like a little bit more than interim, meaning in the middle, just kind of like a bridge period of time.
One other point to add in terms of this particular site, As Leona mentioned, it has an extremely high level of oil and gas drilling, and it's only 12 miles north. It's actually 12 miles north of WIP, which is storing transuranic weapons waste. But the other really important point here is that it's above the Ogallala Aquifer, which is one of the largest aquifers in North America that serves 8 states. And if that were to be contaminated, that would be an absolute disaster. And one other piece of information, too, is that the NRC themselves, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has admitted that these casks, these transport casks, have routine releases of radiation. That's without an accident. So we know that high-level spent fuel is extremely toxic and gamma radiation can leak out. And this is a huge concern for literally everyone who would be along the transport routes, which could be some of your listeners wherever they're located, because it's waste from over 100 reactors from across the country.
This makes it truly a national issue. So it's not a matter of if people happen to be in New Mexico. We need response and we need action by people around the country and around the world, because anybody can make these comments, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Leona, you wanted to add something?
Eileen said it's above the Ogallala, but technically they moved the maps.
This is one more tactic of the nuclear industry, because they literally changed the map.
It was T. Boone Pickens, the billionaire. He was one of the chancellors at University of Texas. They were the ones who drew up the map.
What we understand is that they actually changed the maps. We're concerned about the groundwater, and Eileen mentioned it's above the aquifer, but technically, according to their information, we know it's near and could harm the aquifer and the groundwater and you know, the local environment altogether, but because of this manipulation, like you mentioned, it's something that the government and the powers that be, if they realize that this is a serious problem, instead of addressing the problem or stopping the project altogether, what they've done is conveniently manipulated the information. And we've seen this in different cases where they downplay the impacts. For an example, we mentioned WIP earlier, the Waste Isolation Pilot Project. When people were concerned about transport routes, well, they just changed the route. But how in the world can you change where the aquifer exists? So this is just unheard of, and this is some of the tactics that they're using that we need to address and makes our job a lot more difficult when we're trying to protect our precious water, especially here in the Southwest Desert region.
This is clearly an issue of national importance. And not just for now, but for a long time into the future, especially considering that nuclear waste, the plutonium in nuclear high-level waste, has a half-life of 24,000 years. So they don't have a plan for long-term storage, and the difficulty is that interim storage might turn into forever storage and contamination of the local area and the people and the environment. What can the listeners of Nuclear Hot Seat do to help support you as you address this issue and attempt to inject some sanity into this process and slow it down, if not stop it completely?
Like I said, this is the beginning of a longer process, and we're just in the scoping period now. So what we could do is to tell the NRC all of this stuff that needs to be studied and included in the draft environmental impact statement. And so there's a lot of things that haven't been studied. There's a lot of issues with the design of the canisters, the design of the site. There's issues with the transportation and the impacts to the environment. There's also issues with the lack of an analysis of the impact to an environmental justice community. There's so many things that the NRC needs to look into, and we need folks all around the country and even the world, anybody can comment on these issues and tell the NRC this needs to be included in the draft EIS.
So two important questions. Where do they go to do this? And, of course, we'll have a link up on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 356. But beyond that, Is there a list of talking points available that people can draw upon when they're coming up with their own comments? So where do they go and where do they get the information?
The NRC will be holding 4 public meetings nationally. So the first one is going to be April 25th at the NRC headquarters in Rockville, Maryland, that anybody can access either online or over the phone. And we do have some draft talking points that are available. There's a few websites that I know that you will post. Go to nonuclearwaste.org, and you can go straight to the NRC website. And you can also go to our Facebook page, Halt Holtec. And so this first meeting on April 25th is an opportunity for folks to listen to the NRC and also comment directly. There's also 3 meetings in New Mexico that people can attend, but the important thing is that we want folks to send comments by May 29th to the NRC. There will be draft comments available on nonuclearwaste.org. There will be draft comments available on Halt Holtec and nuclearnewmexico.com/nuclear-waste.
We will, of course, have all of those links up on the website so that people can click on them and go and make the comments, because this is about the future of the American Southwest, the people who live there, the people who are of the land, the people in the cities, the water supply that underlies 8 states and is used as both drinking water and for agriculture, meaning our food supply. This could not be more urgent. And now is not the time for our government to be allowed to sweep a nuclear mess under a rug where it's not going to go away. It's going to just sit there and fester and ultimately be a big, big problem for not only that part of the country, but the entire country and possibly the entire planet.
Absolutely. And I just want to emphasize something just to make sure people caught it, that Leona said the April 25th NRC meeting is actually a webinar. So it's really ideal for people who can't physically come to New Mexico, and but who are potentially on along the transport routes or who live in reactor communities and want to comment. So April 25th is a really important date to keep in mind. And I just wanted to say one thing to a point that you brought up about folks that are living in reactor communities and are living with this waste already and obviously don't want it, are being harmed by it, are possibly watching loved ones be impacted and get sick. Obviously, those of us in New Mexico, we also don't want it. And without being sort of a Pollyanna about this, I actually think this is an opportunity for us to tap into some solidarity around halting the entire nuclear fuel chain and linking arms across the divides that we have to stop creating nuclear weapons and nuclear energy, because we're all harmed by this dangerous nuclear beast, as I like to call it.
Having just come back from Three Mile Island and learned what actually did happen to my body as a result of the exposure, I could not agree with you more.
We know there's a lot of communities out there that want to get rid of their waste, and we're not doing this work just to protect New Mexico, although New Mexico is our home, and we don't want New Mexico to be further impacted as a national sacrifice zone. But this is really a national issue for everybody, because there's a serious question of what do we do with all the waste from these power reactors that are going to be decommissioned soon. And so it's important, like Eileen said, to consider the solidarity that every community does have to deal with these issues. And it really is a national issue. I mean, we love our state, we love this land, and, you know, I'm an Indigenous person, and all of the Indigenous nations here have been impacted. And many Indigenous nations have been targeted to store waste that right now. It's not just about New Mexico. It's not even about just the Indigenous nations, but as an Indigenous person, I know the impacts that we've faced from the uranium mining, and then the Western Shoshone have been dealing with weapons testing and all of the health implications. And a lot of the health impacts are not studied. So nationally, with the transport issue, we don't know what health problems might result from exposure. We don't know the health impacts or the environmental contamination that could result from a spill if there was an accident, if there was a train derailment, if one of these barges had an accident while they were in the river. Some of the transport will be by truck, but there's a lot of stuff we don't know and connects all of us because all of us will be at risk. And the other biggest problem is that these companies that profited from not just creating the waste, but Holtec from making these canisters, they're getting away with not having to deal with future liability. So if this thing is built and if waste is being transported across the country, we really don't know who is liable to clean up this waste. And then when we have all of these resulting health problems, that's another cost and expense. It's not worth a human life to transport this waste for these companies to be able to pass the responsibility onto the government and onto us as the taxpayers, because we're the ones ultimately that will be paying the price. Literally, financially, we'll be paying for this, and then also with our health and then any damage to the environment or sacred places. So, yeah, it is a national problem for everybody because of the transport of this waste.
It sounds like the two of you and your network of supporters are doing a great job, certainly, of getting the word out about this and keeping us informed. And I will have links posted up on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 356. And for now, I want to thank the two of you, Leona Morgan and Eileen Shaughnessy, for being my guests this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
That was Leona Morgan and Eileen Shaughnessy of the Nuclear Issues Study Group based in Albuquerque, New Mexico. As promised, you will find links to all the websites we mentioned in this interview on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 356. Activist shout out! Profound thanks and a big congratulations to the country of Bolivia. They have just become the 58th country to sign the United Nations Nuclear Weapons Ban Treaty. Their determination to rid the world of nuclear weapons inspires the rest of us, and hopefully other countries will be signing soon. We will have a picture on the website of Bolivia's president, Evo Morales Ayima, signing the UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. And if you want to take action to help stop the manufacture of nuclear weapons, there's a group and a strategy called Don't Bank on the Bomb, which gives each of us the power to do something that really counts. Here's a brief interview I did with Susie Snyder of the Netherlands group PAX. She also works directly with Don't Bank on the Bomb. Susie and I spoke at Dr. Helen Caldicott's symposium on the dynamics of possible nuclear extinction. Cheerful title, isn't it? That event was held February 28 to March 1st, 2015, in New York City. This strategy that Susie speaks of has implications not only for nuclear weapons, but for nuclear reactors as well.
It's amazing. It's called Don't Bank on the Bomb. And that's the website, too, don'tbankonthebomb.com. Step one, find out if your bank invests in nuclear weapon producers. Step two, contact your bank. Tell them you don't want them to. Step three, tell the world what the bank says. And if they don't get rid of investments, go public, because no bank wants to look like a bad guy. It takes one or two people only to make a huge difference. And that can cut off the money stream to the companies that make nuclear weapons. You and I, we have more power than we think, and that power is sitting in our wallet.
And how can people find out whether the companies that we're told the bank is supporting have any connection with the nuclear weapons industry?
Well, we do a significant investigation every year. Now, it's not completely exhaustive, but we profile 28 companies that have association with nuclear weapons modernization and maintenance. And it's on our website, don'tbankonthebomb.com. And we really want people to use our information and contact us all the time. You can do that in, you know, through the website really easily. Contact me on Twitter, whatever works. And I'm happy to find out more. And if you find out, learn about more companies involved in nuclear weapons, tell us. We'll do the research and we'll make it public for everybody to use.
Love it.
Susie Snyder of don'tbankonthebomb.com. We will also have that link up on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 356. Here's today's final thought. This week's show focused on the nuclear industry's big white elephant in the living room, the poisonous, forever-lasting radioactive waste that it produces every day, with no acceptable plan to neutralize the radiation or safely store the materials until they are no longer dangerous, a minimum of 5 times the length of all recorded human history. When nuclear reactors shut down and are decommissioned, local communities all want the resulting radioactive waste to be taken away. But where exactly is this mythological away? The nuclear industry has not yet identified exactly where away is, though they like to pretend that they have, and then put on a show to convince the ignorant public that they've got it handled. But one person's distant dump site is another's backyard or ancestral sacred site. In truth, the nuclear industry has no plan for the radioactive mess it has created other than kicking the can down the road, stashing it somewhere out of sight and mind, any place where people don't have the time, energy, money, training, or access to media to successfully fight against the industry's big bucks PR campaigns and lobbyists. Indigenous tribal people seem to be the easiest for them to target. It's not only the Diné in the American Southwest. First Nations people in Canada's northern Saskatchewan province have been fighting both new uranium mines and the country's push to build a radioactive waste storage dump on tribal lands. In Australia, Aboriginal people have successfully fought off attempts to turn their lands into a nuclear waste dump for the world, but that battle continues against a campaign backed and blessed by billionaire media mogul Rupert Murdoch. In truth, the nuclear emperors are all naked. There is no viable plan as to what to do with all that deadly radioactive waste. The nuclear industry needs to stop making any more of it, then clean up their mess, own it, and figure out what to do with it that doesn't put innocent lives across the planet in danger, along with the combined DNA of our species. Maybe if we put the so-called spent fuel rods, all of which contain plutonium, in storage in Rupert Murdoch's Beverly Hills swimming pool, a different kind of spent fuel pool. Or maybe stash them in the New Jersey corporate headquarters of Holtec International, the company that makes those flawed dry cask containers not only proposed for the American Southwest, but currently in use at San Onofre and Diablo Canyon in California, as well as other reactor sites around the country. Or maybe just stash it in the Nuclear Regulatory Commission headquarters in Rockville, Maryland. I'm sure they must have some space down in the basement. What's needed is someplace the brainiacs in charge of putting us all at risk won't be able to ignore the waste. Send home parcels of it with every NRC commissioner, industry lobbyist, pro-nuclear member of Congress to put on the shelf and stare at in their home offices, just so that they can hold on to it till they figure out and implement something safer and more permanent. Let them be the ones who experience cancer, heart disease, autoimmune diseases, miscarriages and sterility, and all the other health evils that ionizing radiation inflicts upon unwary victims. Maybe it's happened to them already, and we have to teach them to look at the cancer rates among their own family and friends, and realize that they are not immune to the consequences of the radioactive garbage they create. Make them understand that they can neither talk their way or buy their way out of the consequences of their nuclear actions. See if that will finally motivate the industry to knock off the expansion attempts and expensive lies and find a solution to genuinely fix this ultimate planetary problem. In the meantime, they have no right to dump it on the rest of us. We didn't ask for it. We've been trying to get them to stop. So let's support our nuclear waste warriors and make our voices known. Comment to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission as soon as possible. Check the website. That's where we will have the links. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, April 17, 2018. Material for this week's show has been researched and compiled from nuclear-news.net, deunrenard.wordpress.com, miningawareness.wordpress.com, the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, khq.com, chicagotribune.com, vancouversun.com, usatoday.com, qz.com, platts.com, azcentral.com, nikkei.com, english.chosun.com, japantimes.co.jp, express.co.uk, ansa.it, the soul-dead cubicle drones who can't look themselves in the eye in the mirror because they are grinding out press releases for World Nuclear News, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and a shout-out to the Nuclear Hot Seat listeners and followers around the world, 123 countries on 6 continents and counting, plus everyone who's listening on our growing network of broadcast stations in the U.S. You are the people who show your love for life on this planet by being the phenomenal defenders of nuclear truth and supporters of atomic awareness that you are. Thanks for visiting the Nuclear Hot Seat Facebook page. There's only one now because Facebook, for whatever reason, wiped out my podcast page and wants me to start it all over again from scratch. So let's bag that one and just use the one page that's up and running. If you haven't stopped by yet, or if you've previously only gone to the podcast page, come on down and check it out. Click like, follow, post, and share. Let's get some dialogue going. And if you want to catch up, you can find all of our back episodes, all 355 of them, at nuclearhotseat.com. If you put in /blog in the URL, you'll be able to scan 10 episodes at a time. Theme music written by me, sung by Marilee Weber, accompaniment by John Barnard, recorded at Winslow Court Studio in Hollywood. If you want Nuclear Hot Seat delivered via email every week, it's easy. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com, look for the yellow box, and sign up for a weekly email link to the latest show. If you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. We are copyright 2018, Libby Halevy and Hardestry Communications. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed as long as proper attribution is provided. And if you appreciate weekly verifiable news updates about nuclear issues around the world, take a moment to send a donation of any size to nuclearhotseat.com. We really appreciate your support. This is Libby Halevy of Heartistry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that radioactive nuclear waste is forever. No one is immune to its impact on their health and safety. We have no way of safely storing or neutralizing it, and still the nuclear industry is allowed to create more every day. There. You have just had your nuclear wake-up call. So don't go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are leaking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Question everything. Intelligent radio for intelligent people. UCY.TV.